Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Dr. Lori Nadel as we talk about your intuition, unlocking your sixth sense. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tell us about some of the work with Professor Destrulli. Who is he?
Professor Destrulli is the physicist who is the genius behind Ocean Tech, but he has also been a musician who's worked with David Bowie. And we are working together to develop a series of CDs with the patient population that I'm working with who have had strokes and are now struggling with aphasia, which is difficulty in remembering language. And what Professor Destrulli is doing is he is developing brainwave frequencies or harmonics, which will be subliminal pulses underneath, say, Beethoven or underneath a hypnosis process that I'm working on that will help these patients to be able to activate their memories of how to relearn language by relaxing both sides of the brain. And we're doing research into which specific frequencies, subliminal and also which particular types of music can accelerate people's relaxation and well-being and immune system and language learning functions.
What is the Ocean Tech website? Do you have that handy?
Yes, it's oceantech.us.
Ocean Tech.
OceanTech.us. And Professor Destrulli is the genius who's developed this liquid nitrogen process to safely, with no environmental contamination, safely and efficiently literally lift the contaminants, the oil, the toxins off the surface of the water without leaving any contamination whatsoever.
All right. And you have to register for that site, right?
Yes, you do. Okay. OceanTech.us.
Why aren't people knocking down this door for that kind of service?
I think it's a question of getting the word out there because, again, this is a research organization. We're just kind of starting to get our public outreach arm going, and that's part of what I'm doing. I'm working with Regina Penna, who's our media person, and we're trying to get the word out. And again, getting, you know, but the politics of the draconian politics of how the government works very often is so counterintuitive in that you can come to their door, you can offer them technology that's literally going to solve the problem and not create a bigger problem. And, you know, unless you have the right connections or the right contacts or you've done it before, if they don't know who you are, they'll put up all these roadblocks. And the Professor Destrulli and his team have been working with the OMSET people, with the XPRIZE people, with all kinds of people to demonstrate that this is a purely safe, environmentally neutral, green technology that could have helped clean up the Deepwater Horizon oil spill that has helped in the past. We're working with the Kenyan government on cleaning up contaminants in Lake Victoria so that it can be used again. That's a lake in Kenya, largest lake in Africa, so that it can be used for agriculture again.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Cool. You ready?
Yes, I am.
Let's go to Maximilian on our East of the Rockies line in Manhattan, New York. Hi, Max. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Lori.
Hey, Max. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm one of the co-directors of Ocean Tech.
Oh, super.
To call and lend some philosophical support to Lori's concept of the sixth sense.
Excellent.
Now, Kant, Immanuel Kant, the great German philosopher, pointed out that there is no difference between a possibility and an actuality, except that one is in the realm of possibilities and one is in the realm of actualities. So let's say we have the possibility of having George in someone's living room. There's no difference between having George in the possibility of having George in someone's living room and actually having George in that same living room, except one is in a realm of possibility, one's in actuality. But those two situations are absolutely identical. And if you study quantum mechanics, and you certainly know about probability waves, you know that probability waves collapse into an actuality. So if all things that are actual must come out of the realm of the probable, every probability comes before an actuality. So there's no real future. There's only a past for out of which the present comes out of, because every actuality must necessarily come out of a probability. So that means that any event, every event, must come as from a past grouping of possibilities.
Right. It just doesn't happen. Yeah.
So, I mean, there is no future. There is only a past, and there's two types of past. There's a past that of probabilities, and that probability gets actualized into a present. And out of that present, that actuality goes back into a past, but that past isn't the realm of an infinite possibility. It's a realm of single actualities. So you have the dualities that are necessary in creating a universe. So all these events come out of our past, out of the past in the sense that they exist prior to an actuality by being a probability. So the probability of a plane hitting the World Trade Center existed prior to the World Trade Center actually being hit by an aircraft.
Sure, or a World War III if it happens.
Or a World War III. All those possibilities exist prior to an actual event. So.
Right.
Being that they are prior to an event, that means they belong to the past of that event. Those possibilities must come into being prior to an actuality coming into being in a world in which things interact with each other.
All right, Laura, you follow that?
I follow it, and I tend to think that you know, we're talking about consciousness, and we're talking about example, go back to my example of people having dreams for a year, you know, thousands of dreams about planes hitting the towers, that probability was in the collective unconscious. So that there are mental events. These probabilities can exist in the realm of consciousness or mind. Would you agree with that, Max?
Well, Max has left us.
Oh, okay.
He's gone into the future.
He's gone into the future.
Well,
I'll catch up with him there,
I'm
sure.
But he's part of the Ocean Tech group, I guess.
That's right. He is part of the Ocean Tech group.
Well, that's good. Let's go to Spokane, Washington. Okay. Ken's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Ken.
Oh, good evening, George. I've got a question and a comment for Lori.
Sure.
Lori, when you were doing research for your ebook, did you stumble across the book written in the early 70s by a couple of professors, engineering professors, called Executive ESP?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Oh, I read it, shortly after it came out. It was still in hardback then. Just a wonderful book, and I think they developed a test.
What did you like about it, Ken, also?
Well, this you could probably relate to this. They told a series of stories that they got from executives that how they used it. And invariably, all of them would do their due diligence, gather all the information, but they would make their final decision on their gut. Well, one of the executives was an airplane manufacturer, and they had a government contract, had like 100 planes in this order, and the planes needed special bearings for either the flaps or the ailerons or something. When they got the whole run done, they had two sets left over, and they were panicky, and they went to the president, told him the problem, and he just cool and calm and collected said, okay, let's go look. He walked down the flight line, and he said, check this one and check this one, and they were the two that had the missing bearings.
Wow.
And the other comment on your screenplay,
yes.
At the beginning of this solar flare cycle, just you had a hard time getting started, really late. And one night, or early morning, I woke up and my body was asleep, but my mind was wide awake. And there was this booming, rich, resonant voice that said, this solar flare cycle is going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you might be right about that one.
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
But along with it came like this thought ball that as it unraveled, it was everything you were, you know, it was like an outline for your screenplay.
Well, it's a stage play, actually, but thank you.
Yeah.
I think that there is a blueprint, if you will, in the collective unconscious that they and there is scientific information about the solar flares and the impact of these solar flares. And Major Ed Dames, who has been on Coast to Coast many times, has talked about having done remote viewing into the future and having seen this huge solar flare coming to Earth.
Calls it the kill shot.
The kill shot. He calls it the kill shot. Yeah.
Let's hope he's wrong too.
Yeah, no, I hope that this is all again like 2012 myth and speculation.
What do you think, Lori, could be one of the most dramatic things for us, good or bad? What do you think it could be?
In 2012?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I think that there could be some kind of a spiritual manifestation, like the Tibetan monks. I believe that there could be some kind of seeing something that on global television that really is a miracle in terms of our own third dimensional understanding, something that we wouldn't have believed possible. Seeing perhaps a great gift that kind of comes down from the sky, something that of almost biblical proportions. I think that these times are so volatile that literally anything could happen, and that we really are being prepared to expect the unexpected.
All right, let's go to our first time caller, Anthony in Madison, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. Anthony, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Og?
Good. All is well.
Good New Year to you both.
You too.
I've been waiting for lifetimes for this year, but anyway, I won't touch on that. I had a question, kind of in a comment for Lori. So I'm sure you must be familiar with Swiss psychologist Carl Jung.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so I kind of feel somewhat of a disciple of Jungian psychotherapy, and I'll just quote one of the things I think he said once was, there is no good or bad, he said the pendulum of the mind does not swing between good or bad, but instead between what makes sense and what does not make sense. So with that said, I guess, I like how you've been talking about intuition and
right.
Getting in tune with intuition. And I feel like I've, through the years, have been engaging in that interactive process. And one of the things that's not really resonating in the sensual fact is, and I wasn't going to call until you actually touched on it a bit, was belief systems. And I've know that term's been thrown around maybe a substantial amount of times on the show. And I just wanted to, after you touched on that and you kind of said it was maybe a good thing for belief systems, I can't help but to recall a author by the name of Robert Anton Wilson, who
yes.
wrote a book called Cosmic Trigger.
Right.
And
right.
Right in the preface, it's just, I guess I'd want your take on this. It says, I do not believe in anything. And that really intuitively makes a lot of sense to me, resonates with me. And he goes on to say, my own opinion is that belief is the death of intelligence. As soon as one believes a doctrine of any sort or assumes certitude, one stops thinking about that aspect of existence. And the more certitude one assumes, the less there is left to think about. And a person sure of everything would never have any need to think about anything and might be considered clinically brain dead under current medical standards, where the absence of brain activity is taken to mean that life has ended. I just want to get your take on that. And I can take my answer out your ear, and happy 2012.
You got it.
That's a little extreme, but I would tend to agree that the hallmark of a great thinker is skepticism and keeping an open mind and questioning answers rather than answering questions. And in fact, that was the spirit of Socrates, is to question answers and to always question, and to never believe your own press kit and not drink the Kool-Aid, and as you read very eloquently put, never to develop a certainty in your own opinions, because that's when you stop thinking.
That's true. There's no doubt about that. Lori, with what's happening on the planet right now, this sense of impending doom, and people feel that, is that the consciousness doing that? What's causing that?
I think that, when we collectively are in a state of fear, I don't know that that's the consciousness doing that, or whether that's kind of the messages that we're getting, from the media. I think, to be aware that we're in a period of volatility and uncertainty, and that a lot of things that we used to be able to predict with relative certainty. For example, businesses used to be able to predict with relative certainty, based on past performance of the last 3 years, we can anticipate, that our growth will be 3% or 5% in this sector or that sector. Nobody knows anything anymore about the economy. Nobody knows, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, what's going to stick, what's going to fall apart. We don't know in terms of climate. I mean, we had the East Coast, we had snow in October. December was relatively mild. And, we could get 70-degree weather in February. Nothing is following a stable trajectory anymore. And I think that you can look at that with a sense of excitement and curiosity and anticipation, or you can look at that with a sense of doom. And that's where, to go back to conscious evolution, that's where you have a choice as to what channel you want to watch. Do you want to watch the doom and gloom channel, or do you want to watch I have no idea what the heck is going to happen, but I'm really curious and excited about whatever it's going to be.
Well, that's true, too. Hmm. Or do you want to watch a little bit of both?
Right.
A lot of people do that.
Right, exactly.
Lori, stay with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. All of Lori's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. If you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Happy 2012. We'll be back. Hey, those of you coming up for renewal as a Coast Insider, please make sure all your personal information is updated so that you don't have any lapse with the program, if you would. We'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls with Dr. Lori Nadel on Coast to Coast AM. Lori, let's talk a little bit about this Georgia Institute of Technology report that talks about some top 6 megatrends for the next 6 years. And they talk about the sixth sense as being one of them.
That's right. It's a very interesting study that has come out. And second here. And it's called Future Media Outlook 2012. And you can download it by going to the Georgia Institute of Technology website. And it identifies the sixth sense as one of the 6 megatrends that will have a powerful impact between now and 2018. And by the sixth sense, they're discussing extraordinary innovations in mixed reality will change the way we see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and make sense of the world, giving us a new and powerful sixth sense.
In a way,
they're talking about I think what they're talking about is being able to switch on your intuition at will, the same way that you would move your cursor or you move your mouse to move the cursor to a particular software application on your computer.
Cool. I think some people can do that now.
Absolutely. I think that that's what I talk about in my book, Sixth Sense, and in my ebook, The Power of Your Sixth Sense. It's really about how do you move the cursor, because the Sixth Sense app is already there. It's installed. It works perfectly. There's nothing that you can do to make it work better. You just have to learn how to move the cursor or how to click on that app and to do it more frequently so that you can identify it, you can recognize it, you can trust it, and you can let it do its work for you.
Have you found that in training people, they have gotten better? And why do they get better if that's the case?
Well, it's just like learning how to play music. I mean, practice. It's practice, practice, practice. And like learning the language. You might think of intuition or your sixth sense as it's a private language, because your sixth sense is unique to you, like your fingerprint. Everybody has their own particular signal. And as I said before, that signal may be a gut feeling. Some people, men, tend to get a warm feeling across their chest. Women tend to get a tightening in their diaphragm. Some people will find that their left thumb starts to tingle, or the back of their neck starts to tingle. Or you might see literally a red light or a green light flashing, one or the other, for yes or no, or stop or go. You might hear an inner voice that says yes or no, or don't trust that person. And that particular signal, whether it's an auditory, whether it's a voice or a sound or an image, a visual or a gut feeling, which is a kinesthetic signal, that is your own private intuitive language. And like any language, you learn by practicing.
Well, that's a good point. Are there some people, though, that practice, 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 and it still doesn't work?
Well, Carl Jung said that intuition is one of the four functions that we use to take in information about the world. And for some people, that intuition is your favorite function, which means it's like writing your name with your favorite hand. You do it because, you know, you're wired up to do it. It just feels right. It's easy. It's natural. It's effortless. It looks better when it's done. But if you ever broke your hand, if you've ever broke the hand that you use to write with and eat with, your dominant hand, you know that you can learn how to use your other hand, but it takes effort. And, you know, you try to eat soup and it spills when you're trying to get the spoon to your mouth. And it's the same way. Some people have their sixth sense is like their favorite hand. It's the part of the mind that they go to effortlessly and naturally, and they're comfortable with it, and it just kind of flows. And for other people, it may be like learning how to write with your other hand. It's something that you have to learn how to do. It's a little klutzy at first. You might not feel as comfortable with it. You might not like the result at first because it might seem awkward to you. But with practice, you can learn how to do it.
All right, to the phone calls we go now. Let's go to Visalia, California. John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, good morning.
Happy New Year.
You too, John.
So happy both of you guys. I just wanted to make a comment kind of about what you said earlier about Tibetan monks.
Right.
And I don't know if you know this story, but probably about a year ago, I was watching this program, and I seen a Tibetan monk levitating at least 4 feet off of the ground.
Yeah.
It was on the Discovery Channel.
Well, Chris Angel does that too. What do you think?
Yeah, and you know what? About that, about shape-shifting and all that, a lot of people say about Christopher Nicholas Serantakos, I've seen him too about 3 years ago. And I've seen him up close and personal do some things that were out of this world.
You look at his face and you go, how does he do that?
People can say, I mean, honestly, people could say, oh, he's an illusionist, it's all fake. But I've seen him up close vanish. I've seen him shapeshift, as you spoke about earlier. I've seen him do that.
Have you seen some things like that, Lori?
I have seen some people shapeshift. I haven't seen anybody vanish. But I have seen people make themselves invisible, and I have actually figured out how people do that, and I've taught people how to make themselves invisible.
How do you do that?
Well, it's actually very simple. You know, have you ever walked through a crowd and nobody looks at you, nobody notices you, and you can just kind of slip through the crowd? Well,
that's not a thing to say to us. National talk show host.
I know. Well, I was just about to say, I'm sure it's never happened.
Let's use Tom as an example.
I was going to say,
producer Tom.
Probably,
walks through a crowd, nobody notices him.
Exactly.
Okay,
probably
that's
never happened to you, George, but it certainly happened to me. and I watch it happen on the streets of New York all the time, and I've noticed that in order to slip through a crowd, you actually have to kind of, most people are unconscious that they're doing it, but it's almost like collapsing an umbrella. There's an energetic shift that people do, that they kind of pull in their energy fields. And I've actually, because I can see energy fields, and I can actually see when somebody does that. When you pull in your energy field, it does something so that it actually kind of shrinks your energetic boundary, and you become practically invisible. I mean, people will walk into you because they literally won't see you.
Is it like, here's an example. You're looking for your car keys.
Right.
You know you put them on the kitchen counter.
Right.
You can't find them. But you go back there 5 minutes later, and there they are. They were right under your nose probably all the time. But one time you didn't see it, the next time you did.
Well, in hypnosis, we call that a hallucination, seeing something that's not there. And sometimes you can do that because your unconscious mind is focused very intently on something completely different that you're not aware of. So maybe you're so busy thinking about what you have to do next or the subject of the show that you're looking right at the car keys, but your attention isn't right here in the physical here and now.
That could be. Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to Watonda, Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, George, Lori, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure, Brian.
Thank you so much. I just want to say the paranormal has been part of my life ever since I was born. I feel like when I was born on 3/4/77 at 7:34 a.m. at 4 pounds, 3 ounces. Just these numbers just seem to add up to me. But through growing up, I was really interested in the paranormal and the scientific part of it. And I'm very privileged to be doing what I'm doing now and hosting ghost tours in Galveston.
Good for you.
I talk about history and ghosts and the paranormal, everything paranormal, and they actually pay me for it. It's but my question is pertaining to 2012, and this is actually something I've been dealing with in my life, is am I having a psychic event or am I creating something? And pertaining to the 2012, did the Mayans predict what was going to happen, or are we creating this inevitability?
Well, I don't think there's an inevitability. I really don't think that the Mayan calendar, even though it is literally etched in stone, I don't think it's an inevitability. I mean, it's possible they ran out of space. We don't really know why does it end at this particular time. Maybe there was some numerological reason, or maybe there was some astrologer. Maybe they got some divine message that said, hey, just stop now. Maybe it's a cosmic joke. You know, maybe somebody said, hey, maybe if you stop at 2012, we'll really freak them out way ahead thousands of years in the future. I mean, we don't know. But we do know that the Mayan elders themselves, the ones who are thriving and practicing their ancient traditions in Mesoamerica, in Central America, in Nicaragua and Guatemala and Costa Rica and Honduras, those elders have been saying that it is not inevitable, that the Mayan calendar does not mean that the actual world is going to end in some catastrophic blaze in 2012. Is it a psychic event? Is 2012 a psychic event? If you use the term psyche to mean of the mind, then yes, there's 2012 has taken on this kind of psychic dimension to it. But it's so fraught with fear and hype and myth, and it's so mixed up with the actual events that are happening that I don't think that you can really say that these predictions, quote unquote, are going to unfold as the media is interpreting them.
All right, let's go to Lisa in Canby, Oregon. Hi, Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, George. My condolences out to you and your family regarding your father.
Thank you.
As far as the car keys go, I always blame the Chupacabras. And another caller was saying about beliefs. I think your beliefs and your values is basically what religion is based upon. And according to the shaman's ability to shapeshift in order to gain firsthand information to assist another spiritually, I was wondering if that's something that you have to be born into, because I know there's several generations, or if that's something that the average person can learn.
The average person can certainly learn shamanic techniques, and I'm a member of the Society of Shamanic Practitioners, which is a national association of healthcare practitioners who integrate shamanic tools into our practice. Michael Harner, who is the author of a book called The Way of the Shaman, gives basic shamanic workshops, and there are some excellent teachers in Oregon you can find on, I think it's called shamanportal.org, has a lot of resources on state-by-state basis.
Why are shamans so tuned in, Lori?
Well, somebody said, actually a shaman told me that one definition is a shaman is a person of unstable temperament who gets called by spirit to take up the path of a healer. And so I think that that traditionally somebody becomes a shaman because they go through a crisis, which is normally an illness that cannot be healed by conventional means. And in Ireland, sometimes that would be like a nervous breakdown that could go on for like 4 years, 5 years, 7 years. In other cultures, it may be like a high fever that goes on, and the herbs don't work, and the person goes into a kind of feverish, altered state during which he or she is visited by a spirit healer who basically conducts an initiation, takes place in an other dimension, which is called non-ordinary reality. And as a result of that experience, a shaman is somebody who is considered to be twice born, because he comes back from this kind of near-death experience and is reborn with a sense of direction and purpose as a healer.
All right, we've got Gary now in Texas, and he's been holding for a while. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, Gary.
Hi, Lori and George. This is really, intuition incarnate. You were just talking about having difficulty approaching the government and corporations for the institute you want to more or less establish concerning advancing intuition and all of that. And what I find really interesting is that the larger we have a carbon footprint on as consumers and involved with, you know, surrounded by technology and iPhones and everything, the less we have a capacity for intuition.
I would say that the greater our dependence on technology, the less we rely on our own mind and our own thinking.
Explain that a little more, Lori.
Well, I think that, you know, the more that we become addicted to gadgets and screens and
we have been.
And we expect the machines to do all the work for us, the less we are tuned in, as our caller is saying, to what our own mind is capable of. We get lazy.
Tell a kid at a fast food restaurant to give you change for $10 without using the computer.
Impossible.
They can't do it.
Absolutely. It's impossible. I've had editors say to me, well, I see that your book came out in 1990. How did you find all the people to interview? There was no Google.
which is kind of why I wrote my play.
You actually had to do phone research.
Right,
and stuff
there were phone books and there were encyclopedias and, you know, you looked for people and, you know, you used contacts. And that's the thing, you know, you used to be able to pick up the phone and you'd call somebody and you'd say, you know, I read about, you know, this research and, you know, how would I find, you know, how would I be able to find this person at this university? And, you know, you would work the phones and you would, you'd go to the library and you would read and, you know, you would find it yourself. And your intuition sometimes would say, "Hey, buy this newspaper today," or, you know, look at this Time magazine in the waiting room. I remember once I was sitting in a waiting room, and my intuition said, "Pick up this magazine," and there was an article that I had written. It was a 10-year-old magazine, and there was an article
there it
I
was.
Had written,
yeah,
which I would never have picked up that magazine because it was a women's magazine. I would never have thought to pick it up.
Synchronicity.
So, exactly. Synchronicity. And I think that our caller was right, that the more that we're zoomed into our cell phones, the less we're zoomed into our own mind.
Indeed it is. Lori, thanks for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and have a great 2012, George.
Hey, we're starting off on the right foot at least. Dr. Lori Nadal, her website's of course too, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, which you should just simply make as one of your favorites on your computer so you don't have to type it in all the time. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, John B. Wells, who will be doing Saturdays Now, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.